All right, this is the weekly Tanya class, text-based, reading every single word of the Holy Tanya. What chapter are we on?
33.
Very good. We finished 32. Now, you remember something interesting about 32? We always do a little context at the beginning. Remember something interesting about 32 that I told you? Is that the entire chapter, it's the heart of the Tanya. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Lamed Beis is Lev, is heart. It was added. Very good. Okay, so that's what I want to talk about right now. It was added. You remember we spoke about that 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was added for the printed version.
It was added for the printed version. Very good. Because before Tanya was printed as a bound book, it was a series of pamphlets. Yeah.
How long did it take the Balatanya to write the Tanya?
It was a couple decades. Yeah. Okay.
Was any other chapter besides the Kedomet and chapter 32 added?
No, those were the ones that were added. Okay. But here's why I want to remind you that this chapter was added. Because what we're really doing right now is we're going back to the theme that we started in chapter 26 and left off with in the previous chapter of 31. So 31 really flows into 33. And 32 is sort of like an interruption of sorts. It's interesting, actually, when I made the Tanya map many, many years ago, I'm trying to think about how long ago that must have been. It's got to be 20 years ago, probably more, when I made the Tanya map. And Tanya map is a learning tool that I created to be able to keep track of the flow of the chapters.
We should hang one here.
Yeah, we have one in the other room where we used to.
We have
right. Yeah. We should have one really in every single room, like a mezuzah. You should have a Tanya map in every room. Okay.
Look at that.
Yeah. So, one of the things that it's available from Kahos, and if you haven't seen it, it's hard to describe, but most of you have seen it. It's a color-coded chart, and it shows the. You can lose them. Oh, you got the handheld version. Yeah, there's a handheld version and there's a roll-up poster version. Yeah. Okay. But at any rate, so when I made the Tanya map, there were a few changes from the original draft that I submitted to Kahos and the version that actually got published. But there was only one structural change. When I say structural change, the whole thing is a map. It's called the Map of Tanya. It's at a glance, a visual representation of the flow and the structure of the chapters. So some changes were made to some of the summaries and using this word instead of that word. But there was only one structural change, meaning the way that I organized the chapters as groups. And that was the chapter we're about to head into, was I had it organized in a different group. And the correction was made by Rabbi Yoel Kahn, Olive Shalom, who was one of the people who reviewed the map. So when he took a look at it, he didn't like the way that I grouped chapters 33 through 37. What I said was that 26 through 31 is tools for emotional well-being. 32 is Avos Yisroel. It stands alone, one chapter in a group unto itself. And then 33 through 37 is about Mashiach. So he said, no, not correct. He said 33 and 34 are also about emotional well-being. They're a continuation of the chapters that were started in chapter 26, focusing on joy. And I countered and said, yeah, but in chapters 33 and 34, the joy is specifically the joy of thinking about Geula, redemption, giving Hashem a dwelling place in this world. So he said, yeah, but the subject is not Mashiach, it's the joy that you get from thinking about this subject. In other words, yeah, it includes both topics, but what's the main topic? The main topic is joy. I said, but hold on a second. Chapter 32 came and changed the subject. It stopped the flow. And now it's like 33 starts a new flow. He says, no, chapter 32 is a Maamar HaMuzkur, Rabbi Yoel said, which is 100% what it is. It is a Maamar HaMuzkur. It's a parenthetical statement, a whole chapter in parentheses, so to speak. So he says it doesn't stop the flow that started in 26. It interrupts it, but then it picks up again and continues for two more chapters. So just to explain to you, 33 and 34 are this funny, you know, in a Venn diagram where you have the two circles and the circle over. Okay, 33 and 34 are like the overlapping part of the Venn diagram, because basically you have 26 through 31, which is about emotional well-being. Set 32 aside as its own thing. We're not including that in the pretend diagram here. Then you have 33 through 37, which speak about making a dwelling place in the lower realms for Hashem. Okay, so then there's an overlap. What part overlaps? 33 and 34, because it's about making a dwelling place for Hashem in the lower realms, which is the subject that continues until 37. But it's about joy, which was the subject that was begun in 26. And then the question becomes, well, which, it has a foot in both of those worlds, but which one is the primary focus? And as Rabbi Yoel Olav HaShalom told me, the primary focus of those two chapters, 33 and 34, and this is what categorizes them as being part of one group or the other, is they're primarily focused on joy. So these are still tools for joy. However, the specific contemplation that we're using to bring about our joy, yes, is the idea of giving Hashem a dwelling place in the lower realms, the idea of redemption. And that you're going to see is going to seamlessly flow into the subjects in 33, 34, and 35, where redemption becomes the actual proper focus of those chapters. You follow? So there's some overlap here, and it's sort of like it takes a real expert to figure out which way to call it. But Baruch Hashem Rabbi Yoel was the expert, and that's what he explained to me. And if you look at a Tanya map, what you'll see is all of the groups of chapters are color-coded. So you have a color, and then it'll stop, and a new color will start. And then a new then it'll stop, and then a new color will start. The only time you'll have a color start, and then stop, and then start again, are these chapters, that 26 through 31, I forget which color it is, but 26 through 31, people ask me if the colors have Kabbalistic significance. They do not. It was spotlight design, just chose whatever was aesthetically pleasing. So you'll see, one color starts and stops again. 26 through 31, that's emotional well-being. It stops because of 32, which is a focus on Avos Yisrael. But then that same color from 26 to 31 picks up again in 33 and 34. And then it switches colors to when we have 35, 36, 37, which is proper discussion of redemption as a subject.
Red,
is that what it is? Yellow, red, and then yellow? Okay, so it's yellow. You're looking it up online. It's yellow. Okay. Yeah. What?
Yellow
is happiness? Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think it's interesting. I don't see chapter 32 as parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's talking about Avos Yisrael, and we question, like, oh, the path to our own development is through Avos Yisrael, and we ended off learning about Rachmanis and having compassion, and I think for our own self-development, having compassion is key.
Okay, so, very interesting point. I'll just repeat. You're saying the tool in chapter 32 at the very end about compassion, you're saying it's not so much of a reversal of directions. The whole Tanya is basically about personal development, and 32 is about interpersonal relationships. But you're saying that tool at the end about compassion, that could be used for yourself. Yeah, it can be. And when that becomes the instruction, you're going to read it very explicitly in chapter 45, where it says to direct compassion inward on the plight of your own soul. We sort of alluded to it in chapter 30 when we, you know, the beautiful princess and restoring her to her father's palace. But yes, you're holding your neshama, nurturing your beautiful little inner princess. So yeah, in chapter 45, it will explicitly tell us to use self-compassion as a tool. But at any rate, yeah, 32 is not a real interruption. It's not like it's a jarring, shocking type thing. Like, whoa, how did this? If you wouldn't know 32 was added later, you probably wouldn't detect it. And 32 does build upon 31. In fact, the first line of 32 is, through doing 31, you're going to be able to do the mitzvah of loving your fellow. So it is built upon the previous chapter. Remember, 31 was shifting your self-concept from body-centered to soul-centered as a matter of personal development. And then 32 says, oh, by the way, that same shift you can apply to others, and then it would enable you to love your fellow. Okay, so there is a logical reason why 32 is where it is, not just randomly thrown in any place. Or it wasn't just because, oh, I needed it to be 32 because that's Lamed Beis and that's Lev. It does make sense there. However, at the same time, you will also notice that if you took it out, 31 flows very nicely into 33 because it's a continuation of the same focus, which is emotional tools and ways of cultivating joy. Okay? Fine. So that context makes sense? Okay. So let's go into the text. Okay. Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33. Eidzeis. Furthermore. Furthermore means, and I'll tell you another thing. I'm adding now. Okay? We're building. We're adding. We're adding to all the tools that we've already introduced in 26 through 31. Tia simchas hanefesh ha'amitis. He should have true joy of the soul. You know, we've been speaking about that idea that you have to sort of make compartments in your heart, and you have to distinguish between the feelings that are coming from your godly soul and feelings that are coming from your animal soul. We already sort of embraced the frustration that we have regarding our animal soul, and we're trying to feel joy from our godly soul. We've been speaking about that since chapter 30. We spoke about it more in chapter 31. So another thing that'll help us to derive joy from the success and the accomplishments of the godly soul. Ubefrat kishereya benafshe be'itim izumanu shetzarech lezakecho lohoira besimchas levav. Especially when you see at certain times that you need to purify and enlighten your heart with joy, meaning this is a tool that you whip out when you need it. Azai yamik machshavtei. So then, what do? You should focus your thoughts. This is a meditation, in other words. V'yitzayir besichlei uvinasei, and you should imagine. You should conjure up the image in your mind and in your bina, in your elaborative thought. Inyan yuchuda yisborech ha'amiti. The idea of God's true oneness. Okay, you're going to say, I don't know how to imagine God's true oneness. Okay, don't worry about it. We have a whole chapter about it. But the punchline's at the beginning. The punchline is, you want another tool for joy, for true joy? Especially when you need it, try to imagine God's true oneness. And if you imagine God's true oneness, you'll be happy. It'll make you happy. Think about Hashem's true oneness, it'll make you happy. What? I don't know. Let's find out. There's a whole chapter about it. Let's find out what he says about it.
Sorry, it starts owed. So is it continuing?
That's what I said, yes.
From the compassion.
No. Joy. Everybody.
Oh,
31. Tool. Someone said super explicitly.
Another tool.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And which chapters would I look in if I wanted tools? For specifically what kind of tool?
26 to 31.
And specifically tools for emotional well-being. Excellent. Okay, we got it. All right. Very good. Another tool for emotional well-being. So we're going to think about Hashem's oneness, true oneness. Here we go. Eichu memalik olalmin el yenu v'sachteinim. how he fills all worlds above and below, meaning spiritual and physical. He fills all those worlds. What does that mean? That means that he is the very fabric of all existence on every plane of reality. There is no place devoid of him. He runs through everything.
He doesn't fill all worlds, he is all worlds. If we're filling, then...
Well, that's a different concept.
It's every wherever you invite him in.
So we're going to put together... So we're putting together different ideas, and we're going to, when we have all the different ideas, this is a list. This is, we're giving you a list here. Okay. So one concept is he fills all worlds. There's no place devoid of him. He is running through the very fabric of reality. Vafilu mlei cholo aretz halazu hu kvedei yisbarech. And even his glory fills this world, meaning even this physical world, even this lowest world of almost complete concealment. And yet, you know why I say this physical world is a world of almost complete concealment? Because around here, if you see anything that's explicitly godly, you call it a miracle because it's a break from the natural order. So this is a world of almost complete concealment. And yet, God is completely present even in this lowest world. Now another concept, add it to your list. V'kule kamei kalei choshiv mamish. And everything before him is as naught. It's like nothing. What is one compared to a million? It's tiny, but it's something. What's one compared to infinity? Nothing. In fact, what's a million compared to infinity? Nothing. So everything is as naught compared to him. It's so funny, by the way, in 2023, when you say that, people get offended. I love this generation. This is such an interesting time to be alive. Only in this generation, when you tell people that, you know, God is infinite, and therefore the world is nothing compared to him, people are like, what? Who are you calling nothing? It's beautiful. It really is, because the truth is, the full punchline is that when Mashiach comes, we're going to see that the nothing is really a something. But there's a whole process you have to go through of embracing the nothingness to come out on the other end and find the somethingness. And it's just funny how in this day and age people get so insecure about it. Like, once upon a time you told people God is infinite, therefore the world is nothing. They're like, yeah, that makes sense. Today people take it personally. They feel like they're being told they don't matter. No, you know, you do matter. You do matter, but just not for the reason you thought you did. Do we matter because we're supposed to turn the nothing into something? We matter because ultimately we realize that our nothingness is the true somethingness. And that ultimately there's nothing but him. And even we are an extension of that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. So he said, Hashem permeates all existence. And we said that everything is naught before him, relative to infinity. V'hu levadei hu be'alyein v'sachtein mamish. He alone exists in the higher and lower worlds. He is the only existence. You want to imagine it? Okay. Just like he alone existed before the 6 days of creation, because he hadn't created anything else yet. Even in this place where the physical world exists, heavens, the earth, and everything in them, he alone fills this entire place. So just like nothing existed except for him before creation, obviously, because he hadn't created it yet. So to even now wrap your head around that, even after he has created, he is the only thing that exists everywhere. Meaning everywhere, there is only him. V'gam ato kein, so too now, hu levad de bli shum shinui klal. It is only him without any change. How can that be? Because all the created beings are nullified completely to him out of existence. In other words, how can you say that only Hashem exists when other things exist? No, they don't exist. But we see that they exist. Yeah, those are projections of his existence. So wherever you find existence, you're really finding him. Yeah.
Like the rays of the sun?
The rays of the sun. Let's find out if that's a good metaphor. Let's find out. Kibitul oisis hadibur v'amachshava bimkeirim v'shoshon. Here's a metaphor. Like the nothingness of the letters of speech and of thought in their source. You know, before you speak something or even before you think it, the subject existed. So imagine if you trace the letters. The letters means the way that you articulate the idea, the way you give it form. Imagine you trace that to its original source as an idea, as an abstract idea, in the pre-articulated level. And you try to trace those letters back up to the original abstract thought. So the letters don't even exist up there. Humahus hanefesh v'atzmusa. So in the mashal, when we're describing a person speaking, where are his ideas from that he thinks and speaks? They're really embedded in his actual soul. These are the 10 faculties of the soul that we spoke about in, for extra credit, chapter 3. Very good. In chapter 3, yeah. So before you express something, either verbally or even in your mind as a thought to yourself, these ideas were embedded in an abstract, sort of amorphous, pre-articulated state in your soul, in its faculties, in its potentials. We call them koiches, in its potentials. She'ein bohem bechinas oisias adayim. They don't yet have letters. Kedem shimislab sheis belvush ha-machshava, before they come into thought. Like it's explained at length in chapters 20 and 21. Go look there. Remember in chapters 20 and 21, we were speaking about oneness, how the worlds are nothing compared to Hashem. And now here's another mashal, a physical mashal. Okay, so you get the first mashal. The first mashal is
letters
that before you speak it, you knew it. You couldn't speak it if you didn't know it. You couldn't even think it if you didn't know it. Before you thought it, you knew it. But in its state where you only know it and you haven't yet even thought it, those letters are non-existent. And that's the relative non-existence of creation. It's like letters of speech.
Potential.
The stuff that you know but you don't think or say?
Right.
So it doesn't get thought or said.
Does it go anywhere?
After 100 builds up pressure, probably. Causes anxiety. Causes neurosis.
The right class.
And these are positive or negative thoughts?
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah. Okay, so that's one metaphor. And what are we trying to, what are these metaphors for? What are we trying to explain?
Hashem's oneness.
Hashem's oneness. More particularly, the flip side of Hashem's oneness. Our non-existence. Yeah. Our relative non-existence. How we can exist but not exist. How we can exist but yet Hashem is the only thing that exists. So we gave one metaphor for it, which is letters of speech. Okay. Now he gives another metaphor. Where did it get up to? Yeah. A commission is bargam came b'makim acher, mashal gashmi lezeh, yeah. Me'inyin bitl ziv va'oyer shemesh b'mkeidai. It's explained elsewhere. He doesn't say where. It's actually in Shar Yichud V'amunah. But the relative non-existence of the light of the sun in its source, meaning in the sun, hu guf kader shemesh shberkiya, meaning the actual burning ball of the sun up in the sky. Listen to this. Shagam sham meir mispashet vaday zivay v'oiray. No question that up there in the burning ball of the sun, the light is present. Obviously, it's present there. In fact, that light is more intense up there in the sun than it is how it reaches us here on earth. Yet up there, ironically, it's nullified to its source, and so it's as if it does not exist. In other words, it's ironic. If the light reaches us all the way here, what, 96 million miles away? Is that what it is? If the light is able to reach us here, quantify whatever that light, take out a light meter like a photographer, and you say, oh, this is what this light is. All right, fine. Seemingly, you ever seen that photograph of the Grand Central Station with the shafts of light beaming onto the floor? It's a famous, iconic photo, yeah. You know that cannot exist anymore? No, they didn't take out the windows. No, so it's a much simpler answer why that phenomenon will never be recreated. Buildings, they built more buildings. Yeah. So there's this iconic photo of the Grand Central Station, I think from the 1930s or something, black and white photo, and you have these shafts of light shining diagonally, yeah. And cats are very good at finding those. The sunbeam on the floor, right? Cats always find the sunbeam on the floor. So imagine you have this ray of light. Okay, so you can quantify how much light it is, how much warmth, how much light. And then you think to yourself, well, you know, this is 96 million miles away from its source. Like if I'm getting light all the way over here, I'm just thinking logically, if I would go float up into that sun ray and go all the way up and out and to the sun where it comes from, that sun ray would be probably even more intense up there, right? Logically. And yet that's not what happens. When you get to the sun, there's no more sun rays. And it's not, follow me here, okay? I'm going to drink a little extra coffee on your behalf.
We need it.
Listen to this. When I say the sun rays cannot be found in the sun, I don't mean a bittle like finding a needle in a haystack. Because finding a needle in a haystack, the needle is still present in the haystack. It's just hard to find because there's so many other things there that look like it, that are the same size as it, so it's very hard to locate it. What I'm talking about is much more than that. It's not just that you lose your particular sun ray among all the other sun rays. It's that when the sun rays in the sun, there are no sun rays. The phenomenon of a sun ray only exists away from the sun. So think about creation this way, that all of creation, or if it helps you to do it in particular, every specific created being is like a sun ray. You would think logically that if you would trace it to its ultimate source, maybe I would see this created being in a more robust, more distinct, more pronounced form. But that's actually the opposite. If you would trace a created being to its source, which is the oneness, the absolute existence of God, what are you going to find there? You're not going to find more created being. You're going to find more creator. You're going to find more absolute existence. So in that sense, creation doesn't have any existence separate from Hashem, and therefore we can say that even after creation, Hashem is still all that exists. Now remember what's happening here. Chapter 33, we said we have another one for you. Another what?
Tool for joy.
Tool for joy. And specifically, it's a meditation. What are you going to meditate on? The true oneness of God. Okay, how do I do that? So we started saying, well, first of all, think about how Hashem runs through all of existence. He permeates it all. Penetrating every even the space in between subatomic particles. He's there. Okay, that's one thing. Then you think about the relative non-existence of creation. Okay, how do I fathom the relative non-existence? He gave me a couple metaphors. The words that you speak, or even the words that you think, when they're in their pre-articulated state. So those words, do they exist or they don't exist? Well, they have the potential to exist. But up there, it's above words. It's above letters. The other metaphor he gave me, the rays of the sun. Go trace the sun ray up to the sun. You don't find sun rays. You find sun. All right.
Are you talking about the worlds like a sea of Bria, and the higher it is, the more Hashem?
I'm not sure what you're asking. This,
like the level of the world.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter which world. It doesn't matter. Even in this principle would apply even in Atzilus. This principle applies in all worlds. Ultimately, so the sun rays shining on Mercury and the sun rays shining on Venus and the sun rays shining on Earth, they're still sun rays.
But how you see the sun.
But when none of them are the actual sun. Yes, everything.
Prior to that point of its being is nothingness or
yes.
oneness.
Yes.
So you're using sun, but you
right.
could say tree. You could say sky.
No. Don't get confused. Don't get confused. No. We're not talking about the real sun. The sun is just a metaphor. It's just a metaphor. The sun is just a helpful metaphor. Don't get fixated on this is not a metaphor about the sun. Sun is just helping us to understand something about the nature of all existence. Okay. In all worlds. It's probably just easier to relate to it in the physical world. But yeah, okay, let's continue.
And these tools are for Beinonis and Tzaddikim?
I don't know anything about Tzaddikim. I really don't know. There was a Sefer Shel Tzaddikim who was lost in a fire. I told you that before. What? There is such a vort that referred to the Noam Elimelech as the Sefer Shel Tzaddikim, because he writes there a lot about Tzaddik Elyon, Tzaddik Tachtain. That's true. Yeah. But the Alter Rebbe himself wrote a Sefer Shel Tzaddikim that was lost in a fire. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we have two metaphors. V'kocha mamash. When we say v'kocha mamash, now we're flipping to the nimshel. We're going from the analogy to the analog. From the mashal to the nimshel. V'kocha mamash derech mashal hu betulah elam loya b'mitzias lagabim keda shehu erin tzav baruchu k'meshin izbo shom barichus. So too, literally, metaphorically, I love how he says that. So too, literally, metaphorically, v'kocha mamash means literally, derech mashal, metaphorically. So too, literally, metaphorically, I just like that, I think that's cute, is all creation nullified to the infinite, to the infinite light, as it's explained elsewhere at length. And elsewhere, it means other places in Chassidus. This is Tanya, this is first volume of Tanya, the Sefer Shel Beinonim, or Likutei Amorim. And the point here is not to talk about cosmology. There are other places in Chassidus who will speak about cosmology at length. Cosmology is not the point here. What's the point here? One word. In this chapter?
Joy.
Joy. And in order to discuss joy, we're talking about God's oneness. But if you want to learn about God's oneness, this is not the place. This is not the sugya. There are other places to learn about oneness. We're mentioning it in passing. Vihine, now, here's the takeaway. Kishiyamik b'zeh harbet. When you'll delve deeply into this a lot, what's going to happen, he says, Yismach libei v'sogol nafshei, your heart will be gladdened and your soul will delight. Af gilos veranein, you'll delight a lot. B'chol lev v'nefesh u'me'ed, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. B'emunazu, with this faith. Ki rabahi, because indeed it is a great faith, a great idea. Ki hi kiras elokim mamash, another way to describe it is closeness with God. So when you'll meditate on this idea, the point of it is not an intellectual exercise, it's an emotional exercise to bring you to a feeling of closeness with God. And that feeling of closeness should bring you joy. Not should, it does. That's what it does. It brings you joy. Yeah.
Is there a practical
application to this? What is that? I'm so shocked by that question. Why? What do you mean? Is there a practical application of this? This is practical. No.
Okay.
Let's go through it. Exactly what he said. Can we go back to the beginning of the chapter? Okay. So he says, "Oidzeis tia simchas nefesh amitis." This is another tool. In other words, what am I already doing?
Working on Simcha,
right, okay. Oh, and by the way, just so we don't forget, why were we working on Simcha? Why did we care about Simcha?
That's the way.
Remember, everyone? Because we need to be joyous so that we can do everything well. We execute, we perform on a higher level when we're joyous, and we have to serve Hashem our best. It's not easy to serve Hashem, so that's why we're pursuing joy. We had a lot of different tools for defeating sadness, for cultivating joy. So now here's another tool for joy. Okay, so just add it to our list, because this is what we're doing already, and we know why. You said very well why.
So this is another emotional tool?
Another emotional tool. Okay. Ubefrat, and especially, okay, I'm just reading from the first line. Kishirei b'naf shebitim mizumanim, when you see at specific times, when you need to purify and enlighten your soul your heart azai, then he goes on and says, here's what you should meditate on.
I guess my question is, what are you thinking?
You keep on making more work for yourself. So What are we thinking? Tell me. What's the general subject we're thinking about?
Unity.
Hashem's true oneness. Very good. And break that down for me.
Yeah.
What first aspect of that?
He fills all the world.
It's very good.
I'm saying this to myself. Hashem fills all the world.
Yeah. Well,
those are things that I need to tell myself in my
You're
life.
Meditating.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, fine. He fills all the world. He's running through it all. Okay, and then keep breaking it down for me. Even this world. Very good. Yeah.
And everything is not in front of me.
How can I picture that? Can you give me some help?
Sun.
The sun is a good one.
Exactly what it says. This is what I'm thinking.
This is what you're thinking, yeah?
Okay.
This is a literal meditation.
Okay.
Yeah.
You keep saying true joy. Is there any other kind of joy?
Yeah, like eating donuts. It's not true joy. I mean, it feels...
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes you take what you can get, but it's not true joy. Not true joy.
No, is there untrue joy? I mean, just.
I wasn't joking.
What?
I wasn't joking. It's funny, but it's not a joke.
It's more sustaining joy.
Okay. When he says imagine, you know what he means?
Picture in your mind.
Literally, picture it in your mind.
But
he gave you a metaphor. That's why he gave you a metaphor, so you could picture it. But that's why he's giving you metaphors.
Oh, the metaphors. Okay.
The metaphors. That's why he gave you metaphors, so you could visualize.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Right. But, as I mentioned, this is not an intellectual exercise, an emotional exercise. So the point is not just to see, oh, could I wrap my head around this concept by use of these metaphors? That's not the objective. That's the tool. The objective is, can I put myself into an emotional state where I feel close to Hashem? It's a specific form of joy, which he calls kirvas elokim, closeness. So these are thoughts that I'm thinking in order to generate a specific form of joy that comes from feeling closeness to Hashem.
Naturally, can't you argue that the intellect does bring about certain emotions?
Yeah, that's the point. This is automatic.
So you're saying it's an emotional exercise, but it's also an intellectual
exercise. Okay, why am I making it clear that it's an emotional exercise and not an intellectual exercise? Because that's the bottom line goal. It's like the whole Chassidus Chabad, people misunderstand. So, oh, it's Chabad, it's Chochma Bina Das, it's intellectual. No, it's actually emotional. But Chabad is not describing the goal, it's describing the method. The method is you think about stuff, but the goal is it makes you feel something. Okay? So, we're trying to bring ourselves to a state of feeling a specific form of joy, which comes from a feeling of closeness to Hashem. And these are the things that you think about and visualize in order to feel that. Mm-hmm. Okay. 100% clear?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. All right. All right. Now he says something, I don't know, can I call it shocking? It's a little bit shocking. He says, This thing that we've been talking about, thinking about Hashem's true oneness until it brings you to a state of feeling closeness, is the entire purpose of why a person was created. And now he ups the ante. And the entire purpose of the creation of all worlds, higher and lower. That's a very powerful statement. So this is not just a tool for joy, which is a big deal in its own right. As we explained, we need tools for joy. It's not a trivial matter. We need tools for joy so we can serve Hashem better. But this is now adding even greater importance to it. And this particular tool for joy also happens to be the fulfillment of your personal purpose as well as the purpose of the creation of all worlds.
Obligatory.
Yeah, it's pretty much, yeah, you're pretty much obligated, yeah. You thought it was fun. It was not fun, no. Took the fun right out of it. Okay. So now, he continues now. Kirvas Elokim was how we were describing subjectively our experience of it. Now he describes it, I almost would call it like the other side of the coin.
That transitions into...
Watch what we're going to read. Lies Loi Dira Zubatachtenim. That there should be for Hashem his dwelling place in the lowest realms. Kemesh Yisboi L'kam Ba'arichas, like it's explained at length later. Where, if you guys remember, will you guys impress me? Where does it explain at length later the idea of Hashem's dwelling place in the lower realms?
46,
yeah, it does. Were you just making that up? You're looking at a Tanya map right now?
I'm looking at Rabbi Taub, who says 46.
Oh, I thought you said 36.
No, 46.
Okay, remember I said at the beginning, Rabbi Yoel said that Dira B'tachtein was really 35, 36, 37. So I thought you said 36, which really is, yeah. 35, 36, 37, yeah, especially 36, yeah. And then you said 52, which is very interesting. Yeah, because, no, but that's actually correct. Because in 51 and 52 and 53, he brings it back again to the idea of bringing the Shekhinah down to the world. So that was pretty good bluffing.
And which is the last chapter?
What? 53.
So when I have a question at 53,
yeah,
Rabbi Taub's going to say, come back to chapter 1.
Yes, I will. That's right. 100%. Okay. So... Watch what we just said. there's the way this affects me and the way this affects Hashem. Which is a funny thing, because we just said that Hashem was not affected even by creation. Yeah, but it's one of those paradoxes. The way that it affects me, I feel close to Hashem, which is a good feeling. It makes me joyful. The way that it affects Hashem is it gives Hashem a dira b'tachteinim. Now, dira b'tachteinim is a term from the Medrash, from Medrash Tanchuma, Parshas Naseh, that says Hashem created the world because he craved a dwelling place in the lower realms. Chassidus Chabad especially speaks about that at length. There's a whole explanation from the Rebbe Rashab about, he goes in Hemshech Samach Vav, he goes through all the different explanations in Kabbalah, in Chakira, why Hashem created, and he says they all explain some aspect of creation, but the only one that satisfactorily explains why the physical world exists is this idea of Nisava Liyesla Dira B'tachteinim, that Hashem desired, irrationally desired, to have a dwelling place in the lower realms. So now we're describing the fulfillment that Hashem gains from this, and this is not an incidental idea. This fulfillment that Hashem receives is actually the entire objective for which he created all worlds. V'hine, kama gedei l'simchas hedyet u'shval anashim. Contemplate this. Contemplate this. How great is the joy of a simple commoner. Who is close to a physical king. This is a mashal. It's only a metaphor. We're talking about a physical king. Who comes to lodge with him, who's his guest. So you have a commoner, and they tell the commoner, the king wants to stay with you. The king is going to be your house guest. Wow, what an honor. The king wants to stay at my house. Again, you can try to relate to that. The king wants to stay at your house.
Like in
Elo. Yeah, but in Elo he's passing through the field. This is even more. This is him saying, what's your address? Let me put it in my Uber. I'm going to come to your house. He's coming to stay at your house. I know it makes some people nervous, but he's already there. You don't have to prepare anymore. He's already there. You know how that feels? Like somebody chashuv comes to town and people are like, oh, where's he staying? Well, actually, staying at my house. And we got,
we should all be saying that.
Yeah. We got special breakfasts for him. Yeah. What?
By doing that meditation.
By doing that meditation, what's happening?
You're actually doing that.
It's not a fantasy, right?
No, I'm saying like
Oh. Just this thing. Just, yeah, don't complicate it. Exactly. You said it perfectly. Should I quiz you again? No. Okay. Exactly what you said. Yes. You think those things. And like the Kotzke said, or someone asked the Kotzke, where is God? He said, wherever you let him in. So this is letting him in. So you're consciously thinking about how he is present. And in doing so, you are allowing him, so to speak, to be present. So he's your guest. You're his host. Now imagine a simple commoner, if he were the host of a king, how moving that experience would be. So he says, kal v'chomer, how much more so? Le'ein ketz, infinitely more so. Le'kirvus v'diras melech malchem lochem ekadosh baruch hu, if the king of all kings is close to you and dwelling with you. Think about how that would feel. For whom? Great question. Great question. So right now, in this line that we just read, whose feelings are we describing? Ours. Okay, good. Very good. Okay, keep track. Keep track. Let's keep going for a couple more lines. Ukidachsiv, like it says, Hashem says, who dares to approach me? So Hashem, who is so unapproachable, He just approached me. You were able to get through to Hashem, get through to him. He came to me. And this is why it was established that every morning we should give thanks and praise, and we should say, Ashreinu matev chalkeinu v'chulu, umayofi yirushaseinu. How fortunate we are, how good is our lot, how pleasant is our inheritance. What does that mean? Kleimer, that means, and he spells it out. Kemei shahadam sas v'samach b'yirusha shenafla lay, hain atik shalay amal bay, like a person who inherited an old fortune that he did not work for. Trust fund, baby. Kain v'yesen v'kain lane katz, but this is infinitely more so. Yesh lanu lismayach al yirushaseinu, shinchalunu aviseinu. We should rejoice over the inheritance that our forefathers, the Aves, gave to us, which is what? Hu yichud Hashem amiti, the oneness, the true oneness of God, asher afilu be'aretz mitochas, that even on the physical earth, ein ed milvade, there's nothing but him, v'zu hi dirasu b'tachtenim, and what does it mean, there's nothing but him, even on the physical earth? It means dira b'tachtenim. So we were given this ability. Not that we went to school and we learned how to do it. Even right now, I'm not teaching you to do something. I'm just giving you the PIN number to the ATM card of the fortune that you already own. Wow. Right. So,
what's the number again?
The PIN number is this chapter. This is just the code. So you think about, he fills all worlds, and even in this physical world, and everything before him is naught, and the metaphor of letters of speech, and the metaphor of the ray of the sun. You do this meditation, visualization, and it brings you intellectually in touch with the idea of his oneness, which then emotionally brings you to a feeling of closeness, and is actually, as it were, providing Hashem with his dwelling place here in the physical world. And your ability to do that through your thinking is not something you earned, it's something you inherited. Yeah. Or maybe it's based on this.
No, it is based on time.
You're realizing there's a song that's based on this chapter?
Yeah.
Okay. Mamali Kolam? Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that comes up a lot in a lot of, yeah, Mamali Seviv. Okay, but hold on a second.
Is a commoner and a Benoni the same thing?
A commoner is just a metaphor. Well, hold on. Let's follow what's happening here. You were bequeathed with an ability. That means you didn't earn it, it was given to you. What's that ability? The ability is, if you think about these things, you're actually providing Hashem with his dwelling place in the lower realms, specifically where? In your brain, which is part of the lower realms. Yeah. And it makes us feel this special feeling of closeness. But it's not just our feeling. It's not just our feeling. We're going to get to that. V'zeu sh'amar Rabbeinu, zichreinu l'vracha, tayag mitzvos nitnu l'Yisrael bo chavakuk v'amidun al achas. Sh'nemar v'tzadik b'munasi yichya. The sages said, Hashem gave us 613 mitzvahs. But chavakuk came and he made it into one mitzvah, which is emunah. Kloimer, that means, it's as if you have one mitzvah. You know why? Because if you do this one mitzvah, it leads to all other 613 mitzvahs.
Amuna?
Amuna, yeah. Dahainu. Kishiyile libe sasfa sameach bemunasi biyuchad Hashem etachas asimcha. When your heart rejoices in your belief in Hashem's oneness. It's as if this was the only mitzvah you have. And this is the whole purpose of you and the whole purpose of the worlds. With the power of this one joy that you get from this one mitzvah, it lifts your soul up. Al kol hameinim kiyam kol tayag mitzvahs mibayis mechutz. And it lifts you over all the impediments, internal and external, that would thwart your performance of any mitzvah. So this is the key to all mitzvahs. Zeh sha'amar b'munasa yichya daike. Ketchias hameisim derech mashal kach tichya nafshe b'simcha rabazu. That's why Chaval Kook says that you live with your faith, because this is like living, not just living, enlivening, like a resurrection. V'hi simcha kfula umchupelis. This is where I want to leave off. And this joy is double and redoubled. How is it double and redoubled?
Because
say it.
We have this dwelling place for Hashem.
We have joy. So whose joy?
It's double joy.
Double. And redoubled. You know why? I'm happy because I'm happy. Because Hashem's close to me. But Hashem's happy that he's close to me. But I'm happy that he's happy. And he's happy that I'm happy. So it's a happy fest. So it's double and redoubled.
So don't go changing the ATM code.
Okay.
Like it's better than a few weeks ago. We're all happy.
Yeah, much better.
Just